Blog Talk Radio. On Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lucy Weston. Thank you for joining us for Chick Flick Chat, a spin-off feature of the popular website HereWeAreWithLucy.com. I invite you to stop by and check out the articles. Be sure to subscribe so you're alerted to new content. It's free and your information is never sold or shared. Plus, we know you're busy and prefer quality to quantity, so we don't bug you with constant updates. The basis of our mission is to inspire your independence, support your personal growth, and make your busy day brighter, better, and easier. It's Saturday, May 21st, 2011, and this episode of Chick Flick Chat is coming to you from our new show page on Blog Talk Radio. Because Chick Flick Chat has become so popular, in the early part of 2011, we decided it was time to give it a new home of its own. And you can find all of our previous Chick Flick Chats by going to HereWeAreWithLucy.com and clicking the Chick Flick Chat show page. And there you'll find links to the other films that we've reviewed, like Revolutionary Road, Eat, Pray, Love, It's Complicated, and many more. Please know that the Here We Are radio show featuring experts in their fields will continue on, and again, you can check out HereWeAreWithLucy.com for that information. Today, my co-host, Susan Ragazzo, and I are chatting about the film The Switch, and as you may know, we chat about women's roles and roles for women in movies that have been recently released on DVD and on demand, and everything else that we can fit into our chats, like casting, wardrobe, sets, etc. Welcome, Susan. Are you ready to discuss, dissect, and dish the details of today's film?
Hi, Lucy. Yes, I am ready. And you know what? I think this movie has a lot of interesting nuggets that we can explore.
Oh, yes. Listeners, as always, Susan and I have not discussed the details of this film. And if you want to jump in on the discussion, you can dial 909-265-9175. That's 909-265-9175, and press number 1 if you'd like to talk, and I will pick you up. I have a ton of notes, Susan, so let's get going.
Okay. The DVD jacket reads, "Still single and increasingly attuned to the cacophony of her biological clock, 40-something Cassie decides that if she can't find a mate, she'll still pursue motherhood with the help of a sperm sample that's not quite as anonymous as she thinks. As the baby grows up, Cassie's best friend, Wally, agonizes over whether to reveal that he secretly replaced the donor sample with his own DNA. This movie stars Jennifer Aniston as Cassie, Jason Bateman as Wally, Patrick Wilson as Roland, Jeff Goldblum, Juliette Lewis, and Thomas Robinson as Sebastian."
Thank you, Susan. Okay. The film opens with a voiceover by Jason Bateman's character, Wally. And he's talking about the human race. And while he's giving the voiceover, we're seeing him racing throughout the city. And he's on his way to meet up with Cassie, who's played by Jennifer Aniston, at a diner. Okay, let me try that again. Jennifer Aniston at a diner. On his way, he passes a street guy who calls Wally a man boy. And the guy is very funny, and he's shouting out everything he's seeing in front of him, like a woman riding by on a bicycle with big breasts, and he's like, big-breasted woman on bicycle. And then he sees Wally, he makes eye contact, and he says, beady-eyed man boy. and it really, it's funny when you're watching it, but it really irks Wally.
Yes. And I think it irks him because at a deep level, he knows that this guy is right.
Yeah.
You know, there's we come to know Wally's character as there's a certain lack of growth within him, like, and there's his life is stagnating. It's a very safe life, but he's not going anywhere, and he,
right,
you know, he hasn't fully matured.
Yeah, he's like a boy in a man's body.
Exactly.
In one
exactly.
way. And so he, you know, and what I really liked about this was sort of the foreshadowing for the film, I think, and I'm going to give you part of what I really think the whole movie's about here, is that the guy on the street, said he sees and he tells it like it is.
Yeah.
And that's, for the first part of the movie, not what's really going on with everybody.
Yes. Exactly.
Except for the street guy. So, you know, we start this movie with, like, some real reality. They were getting the foreshadow. But Wally, you know, he shows up at the diner now, and they sit down together. And obviously we know they're friends. And, you know, there's some background there that we know they've been friends for a long time. They're very comfortable together. And, you know, she assures him that he's not a man boy.
Yeah.
but then she tells him that she, you know, in the next breath, that she's going to have a baby.
Yeah.
And he says, "You're pregnant?" And she says, "Not yet."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he his response was, "You're doing this out of order. You know, what's the rush?
Right.
You need to find a man first."
And I think that her next line, somewhere in that part of the interaction, she says, "I'm tired of thinking about how this is supposed to go."
Yes.
Which so many women are in this position.
Yeah.
You know, she's supposed to be playing around, you know, 40-something, like the jacket of the DVD said. And, you know, so her clock is ticking. She hasn't met the right person, so she doesn't realize it. And she wants to have a baby. So what do you do?
Yeah.
You got to decide to go ahead and do this. So, you know, there's that whole thing about, like, oh, what we're brought up, oh, you got to find a man and you have a baby and all these things that society tells you. As it's supposed to go, but then what if your reality doesn't match up with that? So what do you do?
Exactly.
So this is a really interesting premise. I think, you know, it's Jennifer Aniston, and we know it's a movie, but it really does mimic a lot of what's going on.
Absolutely. So many women are going through the same issues that Jennifer Aniston was going through in this movie. And what do you do? So many women who want to have children will not, because it's not happening in the right order, if they haven't missed a right, et cetera, or they feel that pressure.
And
you know?
There are a lot of women out there having babies with people they really shouldn't be having babies with, I shouldn't say shouldn't, but probably would be better choice if they just did it on their own.
Yeah, because of that, you know, that good old biological clock of ours.
Right,
you know,
and, you know,
really
the pressure that you
pressure.
Have to have a baby.
Yeah.
And that you have to have a baby. That's the other thing. You know, I don't know necessarily if they didn't explore that she had to have, she just wanted to have a baby and it was time for her.
Yeah.
And she makes this decision to just do it. So she makes it, she's going to do this, and she's going to do it, you know, with whatever tools are available to her, which would in this case be a sperm bank or finding a donor. And what I like, during this scene, you know, she says this quote that he makes fun of, but she says, "Life is in session." And he says something like, "Oh, where did you get that from? Some self-help book?" And she's like, "Yes, it was one. I didn't even read it or something." But really, when you think about that quote, it's true. Life isn't, there's no dress rehearsal.
That's right. Absolutely. And if you don't do it now, when might you have the chance? You don't know that you ever will. And it is a great quote. Right? No matter how Tony Robbins-esque it sounds, it's a great quote. And it bothers Wally, I think, so much because he himself is stuck. And when he hears that quote, it's a reminder to him how stuck he is.
And that his life isn't moving on, you mean? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
That he's stuck in, like his everything's sort of the same, and that's what we saw him earlier on the opening with the rat race going on, or the human race, as he calls it. So she's her life, she realizes her life is going on. She's grappling with the issue of motherhood, and then also combining that with being a single parent. So she makes the decision to go down this road, and then he says to her, they leave the restaurant, you know, "What about my sperm? What about me?" And I don't quite remember what she exactly says to him. Do you remember? But she basically turns him down.
Yeah, pretty much. She kind of brushes him off.
And, you know, she's like, "Oh, we're friends. Wouldn't that be weird?" That's out of one side of her mouth. On the other side, throughout the entire movie, she continually says things like, "There's no one I trust more than Wally. He always has my back. He's my oldest friend," yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. I think
she goes on and on about all these things.
She does, and I think on a level she loves him. She does, and they started out as they dated for 2-3 dates, something like that, and it didn't work out. And I think she saw early on that Wally is unavailable, and Wally pushes people away. And knowing this, she probably in the back of her head said, he's not going to be a good sperm candidate. You know?
Right. There was something blocking her. Now, I kind of disagree with you there. I think subconsciously she knew all along that he is the guy for her, but there were just the timing was off. Maybe other people were involved. It's the way you go through mm-hmm. life. Like life was, you know, again, life is in session. Things are happening. It's sort of the roller coaster that you ride. And if you're not both at in the same roller coaster car seat, for lack of a better example, you know, it doesn't, you don't match up.
Yeah, yeah.
You might be on the same ride, but you're just not lining up. So here, I think that's what was probably happening early on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the case in point, they go to a party, and this really hunky guy is chatting her up at the party, and she's like, she likes this guy, and while he sees it, and he sees that the guy has a tan line on his finger, and he gets her away from him, and he's like, that guy's married. And she's like, oh, hey, how do you know he's divorced? Or he's like, he has a tan line. Now, only somebody who really cares about you would stick their nose into that kind of a situation and make those observations. So we're clear at that point that he's in love with her, even if he doesn't realize it.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think, you know what, funny, I think he does know. I think he does know. I think it's his fears that are holding him back.
That he can't, right. He's not fully realized.
Yeah, and he's not
They have a fight right after this, and then
yeah,
she said,
yeah.
I think we need a timeout, which again is like talking to him like he's a child.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and in a way, again, he's kind of stuck. He's stuck in an emotional place, and he hasn't matured into the same emotional level she's at. You know what I mean?
And he's in the friend zone. She's put him there. You know, and how, you know, it's that age-old question. How do you get out of the friend zone once you're there? You don't want to go into, if you care about somebody, you know, more than friends, you don't want to be in the friend zone because it's sort of the dead zone then. You're probably not going to come out. They're going to move on with somebody else. So she gets pregnant. Some time goes by. They have their time out. She gets pregnant. He gets an invitation in the mail that says, I'm getting pregnant, and it's a pregnancy party, which... What did you think? Weird, current, only in the movies? How did you feel about that? I thought it was kind of
I thought it was very modern, but it almost had an only in the movies type of feel to it. But you know what? I've never been invited to one, so they might be out there. You know?
Yes, me too.
I thought it was interesting.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I thought the whole concept of the pregnancy party was very interesting because in a typical culturally accepted standard, you would get married first, then you would have a baby, and there are certain rites of passage you go through. So I saw the party as being a rite of passage. Since she didn't have the marriage part, the party was kind of a rite of passage into motherhood.
Oh, very good point, Susan. Yes.
You know?
And also it's sort of a coming out party. Like, this is what I'm doing. You make the – it's one of those things that you know how in life you say something and suddenly it's kind of written in stone? And whole time you're thinking about it, it's not, well, maybe you're deliberating. But then suddenly you say it and you start to tell a lot of people and it becomes real.
Yeah. Yeah,
so I
absolutely.
Think that was sort of what – and I like what you said about that it's – yeah, it's like her – you know, it's sort of the way of setting up a tradition. I did just read recently in the New York Times about a couple who's only been married a few years. They're an older couple, but they were throwing a very big "we're getting divorced" party because they're very good friends and they have all these friends that are, you know, as a couple and individually. So they were actually having a "we're getting divorced" party.
Okay, that's cool.
Right? So it's not modern.
I guess that kind of goes along with the rite of passage idea. Okay,
yes.
We've gotten through this point, now we're moving on, and there needs to be like a transitional type of acknowledgement.
And they've made the decision, and let everybody know so that it even becomes more real. So in this scene with the party, we meet Juliette Lewis, his character, mm-hmm. Debbie Epstein, who's Cassie's supportive friend. She's the wild and carefree girl that, you know, everybody sort of has one of these friends. And it's an interesting juxtaposition to Wally, who is basically the voice of reason.
Yes, yeah, right? Very interesting. I think
we all need
a little bit of that devil on one shoulder, angel on the other shoulder in our lives.
Good point. Yes.
Balance.
You have,
you know.
You see both sides of things. And yeah. And she actually, while Debbie's going around, you know, joking and the music's going and they're all having a great time, Cassie tells Wally that this whole process is sort of depressing.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
she's not, you know, she wants to do it, but at the same time, it's the method that isn't really what she thought it was going to be, but she's
sure.
willing to go. So then we meet Roland, and Wally refers to Roland as the Viking. And Roland is the donor, or the selected donor.
Yeah.
This is where and when, at this party, the switch, which the movie's entitled for, it happens.
Yeah.
Jason Bateman goes in the bathroom. He's very drunk, and he's on some kind of stimulant that Debbie Epstein gave him, and he goes in, he spills Roland's sample, and then he gets the idea that he's going to refill the container, and he does.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't remember doing it because of whatever he took and all the liquor.
Yes, he completely blacks out for years.
So then the movie at that point basically switches from this, you know, the ramp up to the whole getting pregnant and the decision making. The decision is already made. He does something, whether you want to say it's conscious or it's unconscious because of the drugs and alcohol, but he makes a decision on his own, but he doesn't remember it, and then she gets pregnant and moves out of the city. 7 years go by. She comes back. Mm-hmm. One thing about this, she left him with a dog.
Yeah. Yeah,
which again
I think
is like he's a child, like he needed companionship.
That exactly. I think that's what she thought. You know, he's going to be alone, and because of the way he deals with people, he deals with people at a distance, at an arm's length, and his level of responsibility. I think a pet, a dog, was well suited for him because he doesn't have the maturity level yet, and he doesn't have the willingness to fully open his heart yet. So a pet is just ideal. You know what I mean?
Well, you're really down on Wally. I'm really glad that you saw him this way so we could discuss this because I didn't.
Uh-huh.
I really was trying to look at the other things, but I love what you're saying about this. And you're right about that, that the dog, it doesn't talk back. It's always there. It's a constant companion. It's something steady for him. And she
yeah.
must have realized that this is what. So she knows him well.
Sure. Yeah.
So, okay, she moves back to the city. And he gets to meet Sebastian, who it's mm-hmm. unknown to him that this is his son.
Yeah.
And they're in a restaurant, and they're you know, it's obvious that the kid, like, it's almost so apparent to us right away as the audience that this is his child.
Yeah. Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
Besides,
they mimic each other.
Know,
it's like a mini.
And also, I thought the casting was excellent. The little boy was just so cute. And a really good actor, you know, he's
right?
6 years old in real life, and he played 6 years old, or, yeah, 6 years old, right? That's what he was playing.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
just really, really, really,
really
great
good.
Casting. Yeah, good
yeah,
casting.
Absolutely.
And you didn't doubt it for a minute.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure. But,
so
but you're like, we go through this whole movie, and we don't see it. I think we're past the halfway point when Jason Bateman finally finds out, Wally finally finds out that Sebastian is his, or figures it out, I should say.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that. It took a long time, and I think this goes back to what I said earlier, is we only see what we want to see.
Yeah.
And sometimes things are right in front of us. Like, it's so apparent at that first meeting
yeah.
when he meets Sebastian in the restaurant, and
yep.
and yet it goes on, and then even, let me just take a little side note here, she has drinks with Roland when she comes back to town and shows him a picture of Sebastian, who Roland believes,
yeah.
and she believes, is Roland's son. And he says, I got to tell you that I see more of myself in him than I see of you in him.
Right,
but it's not
right.
even his kid. So, again,
yeah.
we have somebody looking at something and seeing what they want to see, not
yeah.
what's really in front of them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think you're right on with that. And it's
so,
sad. You know, we need to open our eyes.
Open your eyes,
you know?
Right, and look at what's right in front of you. And you're right.
Yeah.
So all these things start to happen. And nobody's really putting it together. You know, we see them at the aquarium, and they're standing exactly the same way. And then they have a conversation about a hypochondriac, and the kid says, I'm a hypochondriac. And the kid goes, I have that too.
Yeah. Or the lady on the bus said,
yeah,
he looks just like you. And Jason Bateman says, that's not my son.
And she follows up again. I think she says something,
yeah.
well, he's a miniature you.
Yeah, she said it like 2-3 times, and he just kept, no.
And, it's clear to those on the outside of what's going on. But when you're on the inside, all this other stuff gets in the way.
Yeah,
and it clouds your judgment, you know. So so he sees a picture of Diane Sawyer, and he has a stirring, and he's like, oh, wait a minute. And then he starts to put this all together, what we just talked about. And he goes to see Jeff Goldblum, who is his friend, and, you know, he's like, well, what is it? And then Jeff Goldblum says, well, that night you came here and you were so drunk out of your mind, you were saying something about switching Diane Sawyer with the Viking or some comment. And then, of course, Wally's like, what? You didn't tell me?
Yeah. How was I supposed to know what that meant?
Right. And he's like, I switched the ingredients. I did it. And he realizes. So now he sees Sebastian clearly. He knows that it's his kid. And now the next, like the third act of this movie is he's got to tell her.
Yes. And then,
and
you know,
how do you do that?
Yeah, because you, do I tell her? Will she hate me forever? Will I lose her and end him forever?
Right.
A lot of emotion going on there, a lot of what ifs going on there.
And guilt. He has just pure guilt over what he did.
And he keeps saying, I hijacked her pregnancy, which I thought was a great line.
Yes.
I hijacked her pregnancy. He did. He's the one who ultimately made the decision for her. And he felt bad about it. He did.
He did. And he, and I think it starts to make him mature and see that there are consequences to your actions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huge and here he's got a, you know, very big consequence, which is this. So he's got this crisis of consciousness about what he did, but he's also torn because I think at this point we know that he really cares about this kid.
Yeah, yeah, we definitely see that.
And, you know, now that he knows it's his son, it becomes a whole, there's a whole other level of caring there.
Yeah, and we see that come out in the lice scene.
Yes.
Which was huge. I thought that was a huge scene.
That is like something a parent does.
And that's exactly it. He stepped up.
Yeah.
He stepped up and became the parent. Yeah, he put his own issues aside to tend to his child. He truly became a father. So that scene so touched my heart. And then afterwards, with the picture frames, I think he came to another level of realization because here Sebastian collects picture frames, but he doesn't put his own pictures in it. He leaves the fake picture of the people you don't know in there. And he kind of, Sebastian makes up a family because he doesn't know who his father is, and he doesn't know who his father's family is. So he's telling Wally, well, I pretend this is my father, and this is my father's brother, and that's my grandfather, and this is what they love to do. And he has this whole fantasy life. And here we find out that that Wally's own father abandoned him as a child. And it's like, click, you see the light bulb over his head, that Sebastian's kind of going through the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't want to.
And that's probably why he's somewhat stunted in his growth.
Sure, absolutely.
Because nobody came into his life to be that father figure.
Absolutely.
And now he's kind of thrust into it. I don't want to say unwittingly, because he obviously did what he did, but he didn't. It was somewhat skewed. Okay, so we find out, and in that moment, after the whole lice scene between Wally and Sebastian, she comes home, and they're talking, and he tries to like tell her something, and then she says something about being away with Roland, and he doesn't say like I love you or I want to be with you or this is my kid, and she says, what, you got nothing for me? And and then that's it. There's sort of another little break there, and he can't bring himself to tell her. So we're already at 6 minutes left, so I got tons more I want to talk about. So let's.
I know.
Okay, so they have other incidents that go along. Obviously, there's a lot in the movie happening, like the rock climbing party, and there's really, they're all tied up on these lines which connect you when you do rock climbing from one person to the other person to the helper but none of them are connecting correctly.
Yeah.
And I thought that was an interesting choice to put the party there. The kid didn't want the party there, we find out. But they're all connected with these wires, but they're not connecting as human beings.
Yeah, that's interesting. Very nice metaphor there.
So then now she makes a comment to him at some point in the movie about, I got this Roland thing going on. And he's like, what Roland thing? You know, like, so it's becoming very apparent to him that he needs to tell her and reveal this.
Yeah.
And one thing she said, and this is something, you know, you and I talk about in our other Chicks Lit chats about, and especially why we do the show, is about how women are portrayed in different things that we do and what, you know, life imitates art. And she says this comment, he's a really good guy, meaning Roland.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everybody I know personally that has ever said that about a man that they got married to is miserable.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because
you're doing it for the wrong reason.
Basing it on, yes, it's not like, oh, I love him passionately, or, oh, he's, you know, the best thing that ever happened to me, or whatever else, whatever euphemism you want to use. When you justify he's a really good guy, it's almost like you're settling.
Sure. That's exactly what
he may
what
be
you're
a great
doing.
Guy, but it's like you're settling. And I thought, oh, that was key writing.
Absolutely. And I think there's a part of her, she's settling because I think she wants a father for her son. So who better than the real father, at least so she thinks.
Than the real father,
point.
So she thinks, right.
Yeah.
But see, now,
yeah.
even had he been the real father, it may not have been the best matchup for her and for the child, because obviously she's, you know, Wally's the guy for her, ultimately.
Yeah.
So Sebastian gets in a little fight, and he comes to Wally's apartment. Wally brings him home, and when he brings him back to Cassie, there's a party going on, and Roland is about to propose. And Roland shows Wally the ring, and finally Wally, at that moment, I think, is when he really grows up, and he realizes, I have to tell you. And there's even a point where Roland is saying to Wally, sit down, you know, like basically take a back seat. And he says, I can't, I'm not going to sit down, you know, and he stands up in front of everybody at the party and declares, I'm the seed guy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And then he tells her, I love you. And they're all like, awkward.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said out loud when I was watching the movie.
You said awkward.
But you know what?
It was like a whole
I did. It was very funny.
Nobody wants to be in that moment, yes.
This was his last opportunity. He realized if he didn't do it now, he would not be able, he would not have a chance. So he was
he pushed
with his back to the wall.
Yeah, and he says, you've changed me, he's changed me, meaning Sebastian. So he's grown up, and we see this grown-up Wally all of a sudden before our eyes. So she slaps him and basically says, don't ever speak to us again, and gets him going. We're down to 2 minutes, Sue.
Okay.
So it brings us back to the opening scene. He's going through life again. There's a voiceover all about the human race, and it's you know, it's sad, and he's alone. But one day he comes out of work, and she's waiting for him. And it's just by happenstance that she's there, I suppose, or I mean, obviously she planned it, but it's as if, to me, she was waiting for him her whole life. But she just only realized it.
Yeah.
So even though the day seems random that she shows up, it was just bound to happen at some point.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he says, will you marry me? And she says, probably, because there really isn't any other alternative for her by choice at this point.
Yeah.
So you have this whole issue of unrealized love for her until this moment, and he had this unrequited love all this time for 13 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, I thought that was very poignant. I thought it was a nice way to sort of wrap up the movie. And then they threw in an ending scene, which was Sebastian's birthday party.
Which I enjoyed.
Yes. And, you know, he talks about animals and all the things he likes. And, Susan, we are down to 1 minute.
All right.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, if we want to go long, if anybody's listening, we're going to go long and just finish what we have to say. So we'll just keep recording, but we won't be streaming to the listening audience. And I apologize for that. The show is only booked for 30 minutes for Blog Talk Radio. Okay, we have this scene, and the voiceover, Jason Bateman says, you know, fate works its magic and you're connected.
Yeah.
And this is what I think ultimately the whole movie comes down to, is about obviously being connected, and whether that's biologically connected or emotionally connected or mentally connected, it's really the whole gist of what the point of this movie is.
Yeah, it's about the connection. We're not put on this planet to be on islands by ourselves. We're meant to be with each other, to be connected to each other. To have extension.
And they go through a lot to find that connection.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is what everyone's searching for. And she did it in somewhat of, it happened to them in a somewhat unconventional way. But even though this is sort of extreme and we could say, oh, only in the movies, I mean, a lot of times when you talk in life to people about how they met or how they got together, you know, it's successful relationships, it typically isn't the regular old, you know, I met him, and it's usually there's something odd or weird placement of events happens and it brings you together.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's about seeing and realizing the connections and grabbing hold to it.
Taking the chance, absolutely.
Yes.
And taking the risk. Because without taking that risk, you may not see the end result, the happy.
You know, now, what did you think? Let's talk about the casting. What did you? I mean, we already talked about the boy, Sebastian. Excellent casting.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I thought, you know what? I thought it was well cast. I thought they all worked well together. Loved Jason Bateman. I thought he did a really good job. I thought he worked well with Jennifer Aniston. You know what? She's got some acting chops, I'll say.
Oh, I agree with you on everything you just said. Really good casting.
Right?
I didn't feel anybody was out of place. I wish I'd seen more of Jeff Goldblum. I really
like
him.
Me too. I love him.
And,
yep.
And even Juliette Lewis, I thought that she was good underused
job.
In this. I thought there could have been more with her. But really, overall, it was a delightful cast and well-placed, and you really believed the relationships that were going on. The sets, New York City, looked great. It just, everything they showed in New York, beautiful. It was
absolutely
nice to see a whole film done in the city where you didn't feel like they were sticking in a scene that's really on a back lot somewhere. You know,
exactly.
It really was New York. Wardrobe was nice, very normal for the most part. Nothing stood out to me. Except for his, they made a point about him always wearing his sweater vest because he was so closed up. And music, when he reveals the whole switch, this song is playing in the background that I didn't know before, but evidently it's pretty popular, called "All the Beautiful Things." And the refrain they're playing in the film is, it's the singer is saying, "Why can't I just get with you?" So I looked it up, and it's called "All the Beautiful Things." You can actually get it for a ringtone, and it's by, I don't really know how to say this, and I apologize to the artist, Eels, E-E-L-S. Do you know this singer?
I don't know this, no.
But the song is beautiful.
It's a nice
song.
You
read the lyrics.
Yeah.
It's really, really nice. And I thought that was a really good choice, and obviously it wrapped up everything he was feeling and all his frustration and, you know, everything that goes along with that and when you have unrequited love. Let me just look at my notes since we are over, and I just want to we're covering quite a bit, and I think we're pretty good there. Overall impressions, Susan, does this film benefit women or anyone in general? What do you think?
You know, I have to say my overall impression is I was pleasantly surprised. I went into this really not into the movie at all, and I walked away very happy with it. I do believe there's a benefit. I believe there's a benefit for everybody, and the benefit is a reminder to live your life with an open heart. Don't let fear grip you so that you miss opportunities, and seize the moments because life is in session.
Very nice. Yes, well put. Very well put.
And
I agree with you on all those points.
On a other point, which is kind of off subject, oddly, it gave me a pang to want a child.
Are you serious? You know, but that's interesting that you were like, he was so cute. But
he was.
Very interesting. Susan revealing things. We'll have to do another show about this, Susan. It's funny that you say you didn't have any interest in it. When I saw this movie advertised in the theaters, I went to see it with a friend of mine, and I liked it. And I like Jason Bateman, and I like Jennifer Aniston, and I thought it was very cute. But I had really forgotten it and how sweet it is as a film until I watched it again in preparing for Chick Flick Chat. And I'm glad that we chose this because, you know, it's getting harder and harder to find a good chick flick to cover for us. And I just, when the disc came and I got like, all right, I was really into watching it. And I really have to tell you, I enjoyed it. And there's only been a few movies because, you know, I try to see everything at least twice to do the Chick Flick Chat. There's only been a few movies that I enjoyed that much or much more the second time. And this was one of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other one was It's Complicated, where the second time I watched it, I got so much more out of it than the first time.
Right, absolutely.
So,
I would see this again.
Yeah, it was definitely a decent film, and I think it's a sweet movie, and people will enjoy it and like it, and then there's things to take away. Obviously, we just filled 30-something minutes of, you know, just talking about the topics that come up in this movie. Susan, okay, I think it's time we should wrap it up.
Okay.
Thank you so much. And as always, I can't wait for the next Chick Flick Chat.
Me too.
We'll have
me
to
too. This is
come
fun.
Up with a good one again, right? And listeners, if you have a movie that you've seen and you would like us to have a Chick Flick Chat about, please email us and let us know. You can send us, or you can even put a comment on the Blog Talk Radio page, email us through the website, and, you know, give us your suggestions. We'd love to hear from you. So thank you, Susan.
Thank you, Luz.
And thank you, listeners, for sharing part of your busy day with us. We understand that every minute counts, and we hope our radio shows and our lifestyle information at HereWeAreWithLucy.com help to make your life better, brighter, and easier on your way to running the world. I'm Lucy Weston.